This podcast examines how every experience, every situation, every moment is an opportunity to work with our mind. I'm your host, Caitlin Hatch, creative polymath and dedicated consumer of Dharma talks, Dharma books, self-help books, and just generally the wisdom of others. I believe in the importance of showing gratitude, and the greatest way for me to do that is to share the tools, tips, and teachings of others that I've found immensely beneficial, which is why I started this podcast. My intention is to provide tools, ideas, and contemplations to benefit anyone who wants to listen, because life is workable and totally awesome. Thanks, as ever, for tuning into Everything is Workable. This episode is all about working with our mind. Arguably, every episode is about working with your mind, I suppose, but I'm going to be really explicit today. So, I know that I bang on about meditation a lot in this podcast. Regardless of your belief system or approach to life, meditation is a brilliant tool. It trains us to be aware of our mind, so much so that this awareness becomes habit. I've not been meditating for very long at all in comparison with some very awake and realized people, but even so, I am far more aware of the workings of my mind today than I was even a year ago, and definitely more aware than I was when I started 7 years ago. So much so that I actually find it more and more challenging to go totally unconscious towards my thoughts and actions. It's this awareness that makes everything workable. Because I'm aware, I can notice and get curious about things, instead of going into a reactionary state by default. Or if I do have a reactionary response to something, I'm more able to reflect on it later, and then consider a more skillful approach for in the future. There's a teaching by the 8th century scholar Shantideva that provides an analogy for the benefit of learning to work with our mind in this way. It comes from a verse in the Bodhicharavatara. This is a really brilliant script, which is interestingly relevant even today. The quote is, "Where could I possibly find the leather to cover the whole surface of the earth? But with leather just on the soles of my feet, it's the same as having covered the entire earth's surface." The analogy is this. You're going about your day in bare feet. You're walking along and there are tiny stones and bits of glass and uneven dirty surfaces. Everywhere you go, your feet are getting in worse and worse shape. They're bloody and dirty and raw and calloused, and they just generally feel really, really awful. And then you think to yourself, I know, leather's really soft. I would love to walk on leather. I'll just cover the entire world with leather. And then I can walk everywhere and it won't matter because it'll be all soft and lovely on my feet. But where exactly are you going to get that amount of leather? And is that really practical? I mean, come on, the entire world. Well, there's an alternative. You could just put some shoes on, honey. Analogies are great, but they're really just a starting point for a conversation, which is why I wanted to do this podcast. I want to get that conversation going. What this teaching is pointing at is how often our approach to life is to wish that other people or that a situation or something would just be different, because then we could just be happy. In one of her teachings, Pema talks about this notion we have that our lives would be perfect if it wasn't for other people. And her audience laughs. I laugh whenever I listen to this talk. But she quickly points out how, despite the fact that we're laughing, we all do it. And she's very right. Like, take a moment just now to consider for yourself. Just a little thing. How often do you feel annoyed or irked or irritated by the behavior of someone else and instantly think, I wouldn't be annoyed if they hadn't behaved that way? Now imagine, instead of choosing to be annoyed, if you could choose differently. If you could choose a path of sort of going, actually it's no big deal. Or you decided that actually you don't really fancy being a victim to other people's behavior or the circumstances that you find yourself in. This is what it means to work with our minds. It's a willingness to own our perceptions and experience. This is what it is to put on the shoes. Basic meditation is, as I said, a great way to develop this habitual approach to our experience. But there are specific ways that we can meditate that really highlight our ability to work with our minds. In Annie Pama's talk on getting unstuck, which is available through soundstrue.com and I recommend very highly, she describes Buddhist teachings as medicine that were given to help us learn how to be comfortable with our humanness. She uses the analogy of a child with scabies as she describes the way that a lot of us will approach these very helpful things that we are given. Basically, she says, it's like we go to the doctor saying that we're itching all over. And the doctor says, yeah, well, you have scabies and scabies itch. If you scratch, it will get worse. So you mustn't scratch it. Take this medicine instead. So we go home with the medicine, like we go home with a lesson on how to meditate, for example. And we can choose to use that medicine or we could choose to just keep scratching. So by keeping scratching, I mean that we could keep developing expectations about how other people should act or about how we should act or about how the world should be nicer to us or how unfair it is that we're a good person and yet we still experience painful things and so on ad nauseum. Or we could cultivate curiosity and learn to sit with our experience instead of running away from it. We could get our left brain and right brain to communicate with each other in a balanced way so we can be more discerning and skillful in our approach to life. We could train in understanding that life isn't out to get us and that we are okay just the way that we are and we are given exactly what we need. We could develop compassion and kindness and learn to live with grace and ease. In her talk, Pema then goes on to describe our experience as meditators and how an itch is actually a rather difficult thing to handle when you're sitting in meditation, and also a brilliant thing to work with. We all pretty much automatically scratch an itch as soon as it starts. It's a very habitual thing because we want to relieve the itch instantly, right? Like, it feels good. But a lot of itches come back after a few seconds or minutes. Or they might stop, but then we find that we get that same itch later in the same spot and we remember it very clearly because feeling itchy is really uncomfortable. So we know, that's that annoying problem itch I get. I've never met anyone who likes the feeling of an itch. This isn't about liking or disliking, though. This is about learning to sit with your experience and accept something and work with your mind around it. So I considered this and decided to experiment with my own practice. For about a month, every time I sat in meditation, I would follow Pema's instructions when an itch made itself known. And her instructions were this. Notice the itch, give yourself permission to scratch it, but only after you've counted to 10, very slowly. Without fail, every single time I did this, I'd get to about 4 or 5 and the itch would be gone. I couldn't find it anymore. It just sort of run its course and stopped. I did this again and again and again because science. I started doing it when I wasn't meditating as well. I was really testing this just out and about in my daily life. An itch would start, I'd pause, count to 10 slowly in my head, and but, you know, 3, 4, suddenly no itch. The itch was gone. So this seems like a very little thing, and I get that. But it's something that I'm guessing almost every single human being on the planet can relate to. An itch is annoying, right? We've piled a host of labels onto itching. It's distracting, it's uncomfortable, it's painful, it's irritating, etc., etc., etc. But if we notice something we normally have all these negative thoughts about, just notice it without the thoughts and give it space. So by counting and letting those thoughts go, we realize how empty it is of anything. It's just there, it's just a thing. It's not good or bad. An itch, well, it's not a thing. That's just it. It's not tangible. It's not solid. All our thoughts about it being uncomfortable and awful make it feel solid, but it isn't actually solid. Going back to Shantideva, there's another fabulous verse of his that I really, really love. This is one of my favorites. There is nothing that does not grow light through habit and familiarity. Putting up with little cares, I'll train myself to bear with great adversity. By training ourselves to be present, we begin to see so much of what we are normally resisting or clinging to, running away from, or fearful of losing. Everything is always changing anyway, so nothing, positive, negative, neutral, whatever it is, nothing lasts forever. When we become familiar with something uncomfortable, it can stop being a big, scary, oppressive thing, and it can become part of the richness of life. And we, as a result, become more flexible, more open, and relaxed with our experience. By training with something like an itch, we can cultivate a mind that's more resilient to things we perceive as being much more difficult. The practice that I described can be applied to anything we normally reject, and I applied it to anxiety. Anyone who's experienced severe, crippling, or debilitating anxiety knows there are a load of labels that will heap onto it. It is not comfortable. Anxiety can feel like death. It's like tightness in the solar plexus. There's an inability to breathe, our heart will race, or we'll feel like it's racing even if it's not. Our brain just feels bombarded with thoughts, we have difficulty swallowing, there's butterflies in our stomach and our chest. It's pretty intense. It really is intense. There's no denying that. But imagine if, instead of calling it bad and seeing it as the enemy and trying to get rid of it and push it away, or avoid anything that might trigger it when it's not around. What if we made friends with it? Not that we like the anxiety, but that we approach it like a scientist. Try to find the thingness of it. Notice what anxiety is when we don't add thoughts to it, like I'm going to die, or this is so awful, or I'm never going to be able to sleep again. What is just the sensation when we get curious about the sensation? Jill Bolte Taylor is a neuroscientist who had a stroke in her 30s. As a scientist, she really paid attention to the experience because brains are her thing, right? She was deeply curious, and following her recovery, she was able to write a book about it. It's called My Stroke of Insight, and I cannot recommend it enough. Seriously, if we all read this book, we'd all have a much greater understanding of our brains and bodies and the interconnectedness of everything, and I wish I could have the money to like buy it for everybody that I know. Anywho. There are like a million great things in this book, but there's one bit where she talks about the physical life of an emotion. And emotions are physical, despite what society at large teaches us. Emotions are directly linked to hormones, and there are clear physical responses. That's why we feel emotions in the body the way that we do, because hormones associated with emotions are released and go to specific points in the body to communicate something to us. So, like, oxytocin is released to communicate our need to love and bond with our children. There you go, otherwise we would kill them all. There's an actual chemical process going on. And that process takes 90 seconds. Within 90 seconds, the chemical footprint of an emotion will have run its course. It takes 90 seconds for a shot of adrenaline to finish like, going through your body and doing what it needs to do. 90 seconds for a shot of cortisol to finish its course. Adrenaline and cortisol. These are hormones that trigger the fight or flight response. These are the hormones we equate with fear and anxiety. We tend to think the hormone happens first, but I guarantee if you examine it for even a week, you'll notice that there's always, always a thought first. There's an outer stimulus, like some random stranger on the street suddenly bumps into you and then turns and calls you a name. A thought occurs and the brain, in response to that thought, releases a shot of adrenaline, preparing us to fight or to run away. In a situation like that, the shock is usually so great that we don't keep feeding the thoughts. The person walks away and we're left with the calm down from the adrenaline that's whipping around our body in 90 seconds and maybe feeling a bit stunned. But if it's something with someone we have history with, like a coworker we've been unable to communicate with, or a family member who always, always sets us off, the thoughts keep coming. And thoughts keep telling our brain to continue releasing that hormone. All of this might sound like some biological explanation for things that happen under the surface, away from our consciousness, but here's why meditation is amazing. We can develop the capacity to be aware of this. This is that working with your mind thing. We can actually notice what it feels like free from the thoughts and be aware of the biology of what's happening to us by actually feeling it. There are studies for this, but I'm going to be speaking from my own experience, and I can tell you that I know the instant my body has released adrenaline, and I know that it'll take about 5 seconds for it to hit my digestive tract. I can feel it starting. I can feel the sensation of my stomach fizzing, and I have learned that this is the chemical result of the hormone release. And I just know what it feels like now. It doesn't make anxiety any less uncomfortable, but it does make it a lot more bearable. I can sit with it. I can let it flow through rather than constantly fighting and resisting and challenging and wishing it away. It's no longer this big, scary other over there, but rather a part of my experience and humanness, a natural chemical response to stimulus. Not such a big deal. And a quick aside, there can be medical reasons why your body is regularly releasing adrenaline, and it's important to get yourself checked out and see a medical doctor. I'm not saying that this will resolve all anxiety for all humans ever. Working with our mind to develop awareness is the single most beneficial thing that we can do, as far as I'm concerned. Regardless of a system of belief or practice, there's not a single human being who wouldn't benefit from an ability to work with their mind, to approach their emotions and thoughts as fluid and changing and impermanent, and also very natural. There's science to back it up and teachings from an 8th century scholar who had figured it out, but ultimately it's all down to the individual. None of this has any value if it doesn't agree with your own experience. We each need to be our own greatest teachers in life by testing these things out and seeing if they work and how, and then refining it so that it really fits us. From my own experience, I can say that learning how to put on shoes to cultivate awareness and act according to that and what it shows me has been the single most beneficial thing in my life. It leads to flexibility, to wonderment, to a sense of joy and appreciation for the richness of life. I know that that might sound woo and fluffy, but really, would you want to argue that you'd rather be inflexible or have less joy and wonder and feel like life is the enemy? Learn to work with your mind. Learn to let life touch you. It is totally worth it. Thank you so much for listening to Everything is Workable. My content will always be free, but if you'd like to help make it even better, you can become a patron by clicking the green button at the top of the page. I'm always looking for content suggestions and people to interview. If you've got any ideas or would like to contribute, you can get in touch through my website, www.faunawolfcreations.com. That's faunawolfcreations.com. Thank you to the very talented Dexter Britton for sharing his music with the world. The music used in this podcast is from his Creative Commons Volume 5 album, available on www.dexterbritton.co.uk.